Earners, what's up? Y'all know I'm big on doing your research, sharing your research, and giving credit to where you found the research. But I always get asked the same question. Where do I start with the research? And the answer is easy. It's our sponsor, Yahoo Finance. Whether I'm tracking the daily movement of my favorite companies, doing technical analysis with their easy-to-use charting platform, or checking balance sheets, Yahoo Finance makes something very complex simplified. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or you're looking for extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. You could actually securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. With a community of over 90 million users each month, the real strength is helping you on your way to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, that's yahoofinance.com. You heard me, yahoofinance.com. Don't wait, don't hesitate. I use it. You should go over there and start using it now. Earners, what's up? Look, I want to give y'all a little peek behind the curtain of producing Earn Your Leisure. It's a lot more than just sitting down and chatting. It involves meticulous planning, recording, editing, and then promoting each episode to ensure it reaches all of you. And if you picked up any of our merch, then you know there's a whole extra layer of logistics from inventory management to shipping. Running a podcast is like running a small business. And speaking of business, I know many of you entrepreneurs are involved in e-commerce. You understand how crucial it is to streamline operations and cut costs wherever possible. That's why I want to talk to you about ShipStation, the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates seamlessly with all your online sales channels. It's all about optimizing your shipping, connecting with expert partners, and freeing up more of your time to focus on scaling your business. Now let's talk about our experience with ShipStation. This tool has been a game changer for us, especially with automating routine tasks. Being able to manage everything from one dashboard and print shipping labels with just a click, absolute lifesavers. Plus, the discounts we get on shipping costs are incredible. Honestly, it feels like we're saving thousands. And as our show and merch sales have grown, ShipStation's robust automation and reporting features have helped us keep up without missing a beat. For those of you who get overwhelmed by order volumes, ShipStation's easy-to-use dashboard is a dream come true. You can import orders from any sales channel, apply shipping preferences automatically, and handle customer service issues right there. Not to mention the savings with up to 89% off carrier rates like UPS, DHL Express, and USPS. It's no wonder over 130,000 companies stick with ShipStation long term. So, are you ready to turn your shipping challenges into growth opportunities? Head over to ShipStation.com and use promo code EARN for a free 60-day trial. Again, that's ShipStation.com, promo code EARN. Start streamlining your shipping and scaling your business today.
Yo, make no mistake. I started out just like many of you, a 9-to-5 worker at your school right behind me. This is where it all started for me, but I learned skills over the years, and I want you to learn some too. I want you to learn how to become financially free. I want you to set up legacy for your family. I want you to build generational wealth. You can do all that and more. Check out InvestFest. Swipe up.
Earners, what's going on? Traditional universities are outdated and don't teach you how to become an entrepreneur. They just teach you how to become an employee.
You go to school for 4 years and you leave with nothing but debt. But here at EYL University, our curriculum is much different.
Our university teaches you real-world skills that you can use to gain financial freedom right away. In traditional universities, you learn from professors that have never did what they teach, and they teach you how to become an employee. At our university, we use instructors that are currently successful in a specific field that they teach, and they teach you how to become an entrepreneur.
For a limited time only, you can join EYL University for 25% off of the annual membership. Learn about stocks, credit, real estate, crypto, and more. Go to EYLUniversity.com right now and sign up to become an earner.
My graduates from my school being Forbes, bag drop. A mic drop. Bag drop.
Yep. Check.
Rolling.
All right. You ready?
Yes, sir.
Is y'all?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it.
Big dog, you ready?
For sure.
Yes, sir.
Let's do it. All right, guys, welcome back. EYL, this is going to be an exciting episode. We enter in the world of golf.
Whew.
For the first time ever.
It's been a while since we have even touched a golf course.
Not miniature golf, real golf.
Real golf, the real thing, real team.
So, and I, Olajuwon Ajanoku. Yes, said it correctly?
Ajanoku.
Boy, playing shiny.
And Earl Cooper. So this is a very interesting story. Entrepreneurs, and they have a company called Eastside Golf where they make golf apparel. They both have roots in golf. Olajuwon was actually a professional golfer. And I just found out that Earl is one of the best golf coaches.
That's a fact.
In the nation. So this is an interesting story. How it came about was face-to-face, hand-to-hand. Combo. We was in Atlanta a few months ago.
It's a fact.
And I was in a hotel lobby, and Earl ran up on me, and he started a conversation. And he was telling me about his business, and you know, people come up to me all the time, and it's like, all right, cool. But this was something that really caught my attention because he showed me that they were actually having a collaboration with Jordan Brand.
Yeah.
So they were taking like retro Jordans and turning them into golf shoes.
Cleats, yeah.
So, and I'm like, that's your company? And he's like, yeah, he showed me like the news articles and all of that, like right on the spot. He's very prepared. So I'm like, all right, I gave him my number. I'm like, let's connect. So
this is how it got related to me. Yo, there's a golf company, they signed with Jordan Brand. I said, Jordan Brand? Oh, let's speak to him.
So we connected the dots, and they were in New York. So we made it happen a few months later.
A lot of pressure too. Like when we in Atlanta, they ran up on you, but then like there was a bunch of people who I think y'all were doing something out there.
Yeah, my family. So we were doing actually like a unveiling the shoe amongst our family. So it was like a family and friends thing where we kind of just filming a bunch of content.
Yeah, we walked in the lobby one night, and it's like there's these guys you got to meet. They're doing something great in golf. I'm like, it's 3 a.m. All right, what's the Instagram?
But that's a dope story, man. You never know. Like I said, that was something that he had enough courage to just run up on me, and he was prepared. So there's a couple different lessons in that. And I liked the product. I looked at it, and here we are now. So first and foremost, thank you guys for joining us. Appreciate it.
Sure, man. Thanks for having us.
Welcome.
And I do want to add, because like it was that moment where I was like, I seen him, and then I was like, do I say something? And I walked by him, actually. And I was like, you know what? Nah, forget that. I'm turning around. And like I said, ran up on him. Thanks for having us, for sure.
Nah, for sure. So let's get into it. All right. So Eastside Golf, we're going to talk about where you guys are now, working with Jordan Brand and blowing up and all that. But how did it start? It's interesting. I believe you're from Delaware.
Yeah.
And you're from Atlanta, right?
Eastside Atlanta.
Eastern
Atlanta.
Zone six.
So golf is not a sport that black people traditionally play. You know, obviously there's Tiger Woods, but that's kind of like an anomaly. That's not like the norm, right? Basketball, sure. Football, especially coming from urban environments, Atlanta, you know, Wilmington, Delaware, stuff like that. I'm pretty sure that golf was an extremely popular sport. So how did you guys start playing golf as, you know, young men, young adults?
I grew up in East Atlanta, and I started playing golf when I was 6 years old. Friend of the family introduced me to the game. I grew up with his sons playing golf, and we all end up getting golf scholarships to go to school. So one went to Southern University golf scholarship, Talladega College golf scholarship, and I went to Morehouse with a golf scholarship. So we were all on the same high school team, but we just grew up in Atlanta, you know, playing junior events and then playing against each other in college. Yeah. And then,
What was that like, though? Because, I mean, golf is not the – it's one of those expensive sports to play. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a solo sport, but it's expensive to play. So what was that like growing up and having to pay for equipment and then walking around with the stigma. Like, you're the guy in the hood that's playing golf while everybody's playing football, basketball, maybe some baseball players. What was that like growing up?
For sure. No, it was different. I mean, I would say because I played basketball just as much as I played golf. And, I mean, I played basketball even in high school. But growing up, it was expensive. Yeah, it was. But I ended up joining a program called Camp Best Friends, and then later became called the First Tee of Atlanta, the First Tee program. They supplied me with, like, free golf clubs, you know, here and there. Also, donations were given as far as golf balls, golf clothes, things that we could use just to help us out, you know, with being prepared when we go to golf tournaments and just coming to the golf course, period. Mm-hmm. You know, like, there were plenty of times I went to Goodwill, you know what I'm saying, just to find golf clothes. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, I mean, I used to take the MARTA with my golf clubs, you know what I'm saying? And
used to ride the MARTA through the hood.
yeah. I mean, with my golf clubs straight up to the golf course. And, you know, definitely got looked at crazy, you know, but I already knew what the goal was. You know, and I wanted golf to be something that I use for the rest of my life. You know, it got to a point even in high school, had to make a decision in between golf and basketball. You know what I'm saying? That's just how much it meant to me. But growing up in it, I would say the best part of it was learning from the people at the golf course. Mm. You know what I'm saying? The type of crowd that's out there is usually like entrepreneurs, doctors, lawyers, people that just have things going on. And I mean, you start a conversation with a guy, instead of asking him for, you know, to go out with him for coffee or for a drink or just to chill for a set to talk, I mean, you got 5 hours with the guy out on the golf course. Now you can, you know, talk about what you want to do with your life, what you want to do in your career. I mean, and on top of that, you outside, like, it's just a way to build that camaraderie, that relationship, mm-hmm. and learn how to build that relationship. You get relationship building skills from just being in golf. Mm. It definitely did help me growing up.
Yeah, I think that's something that people don't fully appreciate, especially like, you know, poor working class, middle class people, where you are trained to go to school and then work. And it's like you work at a job all day. And when I started to become around wealthy people and I realized that they were spending like 8 hours a day, 3 days a week on the golf course, because it wasn't so much about working, it was about networking and building relationships. Mm-hmm. And they say like the barbershop is like the black man's golf course. It's really not. Wow. Country club, it's really not. Mm-hmm. It's a barbershop. Mm-hmm. No disrespect, but it's a barbershop. It's a barbershop.
But I get it.
The conversations that's happening, because I don't think people understand, especially like, you know, you go to a high end golf course, you could be paying $120,000 a year for your annual membership
fees, yeah,
like $50,000 a year, $60,000 a year for your annual. So if you're paying $100,000 a year to use the golf course in New York 4 months out the year, 5 months out the year, you're obviously extremely wealthy, right? So mm-hmm. now it's like if you have 6 hours to just spend time with people, you're naturally going to build a relationship, right? Mm-hmm. So can you really break that down and really, because like I said, I don't think if you haven't been in that world, it's hard for you to fully understand why people say that golfing is like the perfect networking tool and why a lot of deals are done on the golf course. So can you kind of like just break that down a little bit?
Yeah. I would say, so just to go off of what you just said about $100,000 membership fee, imagine the type of people that have that membership. You know what I'm saying? Right, now you're right, going out there and these are the people that you're networking with. These are the people that are in your circle that have things move in the city or just move around the country, period. You never know what business they own, you know what I'm saying, what they're invested in, or maybe you could actually work with them mm-hmm. at some point in time. But breaking it down all the way, I mean, let's say you, like I say, you want to go out for coffee. This is a time where you want to go with your, let's say, person that you look up to or friends, and you just want to network, you know, for an hour and just talk, round table discussion. Instead of doing that, if you pick up golf, now it's those people in those higher positions, they will take that 4 hours and go play golf with you instead of taking an hour out of their day and just going to get coffee. I mean, you're actually doing something that they want to do. And on top of that, golf relates to business a lot. I mean, when you really look at it, you have to be patient, hardworking. I would say perseverance, honesty, all of these things are in golf. But if you don't do these things in golf and you're playing golf with somebody that you want to do business with, and let's say you're not resembling those morals, those adjectives or whatever you want to call them about yourself, they're going to notice and not even want to do business with you. You know, I mean, let's say you cheat or something while you're on a golf course. Take heed to that. They don't think you're going to do the same thing in business, you know. So it's like just the same way a person plays golf. Like you might get really, really upset. You might not want that in your business. Same way they might look at you in business. Golf and business just go hand in hand. So, I mean, that's just the way that I kind of look at it.
All right. So before we get into the company, Earl, how did you get your start in golf?
Inner city youth golf program. My dad just seen a flyer, just signed me up. He just signed me and my sister up, and kind of, you know, similar to what y'all were hitting on early on, like just being out on the golf course, being the only one. You know, it was definitely like I tell people all the time, like I was good at it, but it was still kind of one of those things. Like, where are all my friends? Like, where everybody? You know, when you're young, especially playing like sports, you're just really out there for the social aspect. Like, you don't think about, oh, making millions of dollars or whatever, what it can do for you, unlock the potential. But I end up winning this tournament called the Golf Channel Drive Chip and Putt, which is like the equivalent of kick, putt, and pass, essentially.
Oh, like the NFL there.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. Yep. So I end up winning that, and a free trip to Disney World. I was on TV, and I'll never forget, I was like 13. And I'm like, man, if every golf tournament is like this, I'm ready to practice. Because like before then, it was just like, you know, it was kind of just golf. Who wants to do that kind of thing? And then that's when I kind of just embraced it. And then from there, God was fortunate enough to get a scholarship to Morehouse College. And but it was definitely interesting path, as you guys were mentioning earlier, just like walking with golf clubs. You know what I mean? Like, that's just not normal. Still, even today, like if you saw a kid or a girl, a young man or boy walking with golf clubs, you'd be like, yo, are they lost? Like, is there a golf course around here?
Right.
And so it was just kind of one of those things where so my pops end up actually like we end up moving to a house that was like on the golf course, and he ended up like cutting a hole in the fence. So I didn't have to like climb it anymore. And that definitely was a benefit, you know, my journey as far as like just getting into the game and then just kind of normalizing. And I think that's kind of where we are right now. Like a lot of every decisions that we make when we think about the company, just kind of think about like, what did we wish that we had? You know what I mean? When we were growing up, like giving them that example, like being that, like stuff that you can wear on and off the golf course. You know what I mean? That's so important because a lot of times it's just like it's golf and it's just kind of put in a box. And then you got to kind of fight those stereotypes moving forward. And then, like you said earlier, when it just comes to business, it's just one of those things where it's a sport where like it's just you. And so it's kind of like that. You got to go get it. Like you, and you can't blame anybody else. Like there's no reason like to push off on anybody else. It's all up to you. You put the work in, you get all the results. But it's similar to like entrepreneurship, I would say, kind of in that way. And I feel like that's why a lot of great people in other sports are attracted to golf, because it's like if you play football, you can blame it on your lineman. You know, MJ, he could, you know, damn, Scotty ain't giving me the ball back or whatever. You know, whatever the situation may be, it's just kind of like all on you. And most people that, you know, if you've been playing team sports your whole life, you like the individualism, I guess, when it comes to golf.
You said something good about normalizing it. And Elijah, I'm coming to you because I read this story, man, and I'd love for you to elaborate on it, where you talked about how instead of having basketball and gambling on dice, the guys were gambling on your putts.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that, man. East Atlanta, first of all, where are we playing and how are we gambling on putts? Talk about that.
Yeah. So I played at a couple of courses. One was called Sugar Creek Golf Course. It's off Boulder Crest Road. I'm not sure if you're a Gucci man, yell out Boulder Crest, you know. But it's right off Boulder Crest. Another place that I played, Dr. J used to own it. It was called Heritage Links. And that was in Georgia as well. But
there's a golf course in Kirkwood that we stayed in an Airbnb in Kirkwood, and it was honestly the neighborhood's getting real gentrified, and it was a really nice
East
Airbnb.
Lake.
I forgot, but
probably it was East Lake.
It was like one block down on the same street. It was a golf course.
Yeah, that's East Lake.
East Lake.
Yeah, for sure.
But so usually how it went. I mean, you would end up playing 18 holes. You know what I'm saying? There's gambling involved, but the real gambling, I would say, in my younger days came when you got to the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. So you get in the clubhouse, everybody drinking. They got a little cognac glass. You know what I'm saying? They put it down. And when they put it down, it's open on this side. So now you're putting into the glass. And let's say somebody comes out and throw 1,000 on the ground. Be like, all right, it's 20 feet. What's up? You got 1,000 on it? You get 2 tries? You know, you missed. That's 1,000. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But it got to a point I used to literally make my lunch money. You know what I'm saying? From these putts. They would, you know, we betting 2 grand. We betting 500. Yeah. They give me half. You know what I'm saying? And these are the guys that I grew up around. I mean, you know. Some of them weren't entrepreneurs. They were entrepreneurs in their own way.
Yeah,
you know
what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah.
And they was, you know, always took care of themselves and their family in their own way.
Yeah.
But when it came to golf, I mean, they enjoyed the sport. They saw where you can build camaraderie and you can build those relationships and it not be strenuous or feel some type of way while you're doing it. But while we was in there, you know, everybody just betting. It's a full crowd, 30 people. You putting, it's 20 feet. Putting inside the glass, you make it. I mean, sometimes, a lot of times you hit the glass. I mean, that's it. It's almost been fist fights. You know what I'm saying? Because it hit the back of the glass and come out.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I'm saying? But it's, I mean, damn near, it's like dice. You know what I'm saying? You just got to be prepared for anything. And on top of that, too, I mean, you better be practicing.
That's a
you
fact.
You know what I'm saying?
That's a fact.
If you're not, you're going to get got.
So how did you guys start this company? How does your love for golf in the sport turned to becoming entrepreneurs?
Yeah, so I was living, so first off, I graduated from college. You know, me and went
from
to
Morehouse?
Together.
Yeah, both mm-hmm. went to Morehouse.
Yeah, we both went to Morehouse. Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. We won the national championship too, mm-hmm. 2010.
Don't let that go over your head.
Yeah.
What division?
D2.
D2?
Yep, mm-hmm. yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So graduated from college. My major was accounting, minor in finance. I did professional golf for 2 years. And won a couple of mini tour events, so I got professional wins. And but I was hustling, you know what I'm saying? I was washing carts, I was doing little mini jobs in a bookstore, you know, caddy and anything I could do. It got to the point I just could not afford it anymore. I mean, it cost maybe 100 to 150 grand a year just to support yourself to play golf.
What are some of the costs?
Let's see, entry fees in the tournaments, my caddy fee, let's say I want to pay my coach, mm-hmm. Travel, airfare for you and your caddy, food, if something breaks, your car,
yeah.
I mean, everything, your apartment, lease, you mean, everything.
So that's interesting, because I'm always wondered, but like, what does it cost to get into a tournament, like a PGA tournament? Is there a minimum that you have to put up, or does it just depend on the course itself?
So, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, so like, for the PGA Tour, it's a little bit different. So there is an entry fee, but it's kind of small. But what he's talking about is like mini tours.
Okay.
So basically like a lower level, like a G League, like if you're trying to like overseas, kind of the equivalent, okay. like okay. overseas. And basically you're paying anywhere from, I would say, $800 to like $1,500 for 1 week. But then it's a 4-day tournament or a 3-day tournament. So you got hotel. As he mentioned, you got caddies. You got everybody got to get there. You got to feed yourself. So like it's going to be on an average of like, I think like $1,700 every week mm-hmm. to kind of keep moving around for just expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes like these tournaments, if you win, you only getting $2,000, right? Or you make a win and it only be like $1,000. You know what I mean? Now, sometimes mm-hmm. it's a bigger pot, you know, where you can get up to like $30,000, $40,000. But it's definitely every week, you know, you got to spend that money. And it's at least, you know, I would say $1,500 to $2,000 for every mini tour event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So got to a point, I just couldn't afford it anymore. So I had to, you know, start my career. So I was basically, I was in sales for a little bit, but found my calling in commercial finance. So I was in commercial finance, vehicle finance for 8 years. Was about to become VP at a finance firm out of San Diego, California. And I got home one day and I was just like, bro, this ain't it.
Mm.
Like, I fully suited, you know, just got off the plane. I'm like, bro, this ain't it. I want to play golf. Like, I feel like I still got a shot. And so it was already hard to find sponsors. I already knew that. So I was just like, you know what? First things first, let's make a logo. Let me just make a logo. So the logo that you guys saw, you know, jeans, sweatshirt, Cuban link chain, it was just supposed to be me. And I was just going to put it on my polo and put it on my bag. And then one thing led to another. I showed it to him. He was like, yo, bro, just put down a t-shirt real quick. Yeah. So I did. And I've always been into fashion, but never really took it serious. And sneakers. Just never really took it serious on my own. But ended up making the logo. Took a Gildan t-shirt. It maybe cost me $20. Yeah. Ironed it on. I went downtown Detroit. And I maybe got stopped 50 times. You know what I'm saying? Like, who are you? What's that logo? Where can I get it from? And do you play golf? You know what I'm saying? And they were, and I mean, it was just, it was crazy. It was crazy. Yeah. Got back home, told him, bro, I definitely got something. Like I don't know what, but I'm going to do something with it. He was just like, all right, well, keep doing your thing. He was doing his own thing in Delaware, working for the mayor. But it got to a point I was just like, okay, well, let me make t-shirts, sweatshirts, hats, socks, and like little other accessories. You know what I'm saying? Not really what I'm doing, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But selling everything out of my apartment. I made custom boxes, thank you cards, and I wrote the first 1,500 myself. You know what I'm saying? And put that in every box. But yeah, it got to a point I was just like, all right, well, let's just see how far we can go. And started the company, Eastside Golf LLC, June 2019. And then started selling clothes. And how I did that was I just honestly found the most expensive pieces that I could find and put our logo on that. Embroidery, Chanel patches, but the most expensive. I know a lot of people try to go the cheapest, but I wanted it high quality because I wanted people to wear it, you know? And I know how I feel about, you know, cheap stuff. I wouldn't want to wear it. So end up finding the highest quality. End up from November 2019 to February 2020, selling out about 5 times, you know? And it's just me. You know, and I mean, it was tough, but I knew I had something. So kept pushing it. And then I told him, yo, bro, let's like go down to the PGA show. Mm. PGA show is.
It's like the magic show for fashion, right?
Yeah. But yeah. For golf. I mean, the golf world. But I mean, what I was trying to do was pay for my way, my own way to play golf. Instead of asking for a sponsor in golf or as an athlete, why not ask the sponsor to invest in a company? So take the entrepreneurial route. Yeah. That's all I was thinking. I know how to run a company. I mean, that's what I did in commercial finance. I helped truck drivers start their own businesses, owner operators buy their trucks, see what type of trucks they want, what commodity they're hauling, and what's best for their company, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, if I'm helping all these businesses or helping all these people start their own, why don't I start my own? I know how to do it. And clothes is a little bit more simple, you know, than, you know, going out on the road and handling that whole nine. So, but yeah, that's. That's
so awesome. So when y'all get to the PGA show, is it Orlando?
Yeah, it's in Orlando.
It's in Orlando. So I'm gonna imagine there's probably a bunch of people that don't look like you. Yeah. You got the gold chain on the shirt. What's the feeling as you're walking through the sea of people? What's the reaction to you, and what are your thoughts as you're walking through this crowd?
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, my career, I was deep in golf. So, you know, I was one of the first African-American golf pros at Detroit Golf Club and at Wilmington Country Club. So, like, back home in Delaware. And in 2016, I was named one of the best young teachers in America, and I actually left and took a job in the mayor's office. So, like, around this time when he's telling me about this, in my head, I'm just like, I'm kind of over golf. Like, you know, as far as, like, being boxed in, I'm like, man, they don't allow you to be creative. So I was kind of just, like he said, doing my own thing. But he was like, nah, we got to go to the PGA show. And I'm like, man, I don't feel like going. Like, it's going to be a waste of time. And, like, when we got down there, I really got to experience the same thing that he got to experience in Detroit. Like you said, I mean, we're the minority there. It's, you know, people from all over the world, but it's obviously majority white. And you're walking around at the PGA demo day and people are just stopping us. Honestly, it was almost like we were rock stars in a sense, because it was like, what, like he said, who are you? What's that logo? How do I get it? Like, that's the constant reaction that
white people.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you feel it was sincere or?
Yeah, like I felt like it was one of those things where it was like, yo, finally. Like, having worked inside of the business, yeah. Like, it's typically golf is white shoes, khaki pants, and a polo. Everybody looks the same. Everybody's carbon copy. Like, that's all the options that you have. Like, if you go into a golf shop now, it's all pretty much going to be the same. Yeah. Like, it's not even an option for you to, like, if you enjoy golf, they don't give you an option to even be creative, if that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
And so
I think changing the color of your shirt is like the biggest you can do.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Everything is still exactly the same. Yeah. And so, like, walking around and having, like, been in the business, it was just like, for me, because I've been to the PGA show countless times. Like I said, I was kind of just over it and had experienced it all, but this was like, damn, this is different. And so we end up like networking, getting a bunch of business cards. And, you know, like he said, the game of golf, you learn how to network, and got a bunch of cards and literally just followed up with everybody, sent them all emails.
Yeah.
We get an email back from a brand in Japan, or a boutique in Japan called Clubhouse Supply. And they're in Osaka, Japan. And they like, yo, we'll take a chance on you. We'll take 35 sweatshirts. We sent them 35 sweatshirts. They, once they get them, they sell out in 24 hours.
In Japan?
In Japan. In Osaka, they were the first company to take a chance on us.
Yeah.
Then they like, yo, they call us like, man, we ain't never seen nothing sell this fast. Yo, here's a $10,000 PO. How quickly can you get them to us? But then you got to understand now, this is like May of 2020. So it's like pandemic. Like it's here. So we like, all right. So we, I think we had enough inventory to I think we fulfilled that order.
Mm-hmm.
We had enough inventory to fill that order. Things are starting to pick
where,
up.
Where are you getting the merch from?
Oakland, California.
Like, are you just making it? Like, you got to...
No. We had a house. Well, he was already... See, he had already had the relationship. So he had been... We've been dealing with the same folks that he was dealing with.
Okay.
They were based in Oakland, California.
Okay. So like American warehouse.
Yeah. So they were getting the patches, I think, overseas, and then putting it on, like, you know, a sweater and
going. You just funded this out of your own pocket, or you took a loan? Or
Yeah. So this was out of my own pocket. Depleted the 401k. sold the Bitcoin. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And depleted the savings too.
How much did you sell Bitcoin when you had the Bitcoin? How much did you sell it for?
I didn't have that much, but I maybe got about $6,000 from it.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So it was just below. I would say half of a Bitcoin.
Okay. So it wasn't part of it. Yeah, because I'm thinking at the timing, it wasn't. You weren't part of that run up to 60,000.
Not at all.
Yeah.
No, I got out way before that.
Sorry to hear that.
Another investment.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So, all right. So you had 10,000 worth for inventory.
Yeah. So we had 10,000 worth of inventory to fulfill that order. We fulfilled that order, and at this time, like I said, it was kind of like it was still moving. Like, so people getting the product, but the infrastructure necessarily wasn't in place. And then we end up getting an article in ESPN. He knew someone, so they did an article on us. So at this time, this is like May. So George Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
That just happened, like in that window, and we end up doing a video challenging the PGA of America, which is separate from the PGA Tour, because the PGA Tour kind of came out and had a statement about Black Lives Matter, but the PGA of America didn't. And so we kind of like we put a video out, just kind of challenging them the same way that Patrick Mahomes did with the NFL.
Right.
So we got a bunch of diverse groups of industry leaders within the PGA basically saying who you are and Black Lives Matter. And we just tagged the PGA.
Yeah.
So basically the joint went viral. We posted it and then we got their attention. And then that kind of spread it as well. And that really wasn't about like necessarily promoting our brand. It was just more about, you know, yo, y'all need to make a stance. Like, y'all got to come out and say something.
Yeah.
And so ESPN hits. And then this is when things started really start to pick up for us. So ESPN hits, CJ Paul and Chris Paul reach out, and that's his brother CJ.
CJ, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he like reached out and was like, "Yo, I love what y'all doing just through DMs." Because you also got to remember, like right now Instagram is popping. So like, there's no content out on TV. We started doing Instagram lives, like because everybody's in the crib. Everyone was on live, and so we did that. CJ reaches out and he's like, "Yo, I love what y'all doing. Me and my brother actually play golf. We want two of everything, and if y'all got more, we're gonna gift it to people in the bubble, and we're gonna pay for everything." We like, what? So we did that, and then what really changed our business forever was we were actually together in Wisconsin, and it was the night of the NBA boycott. So I don't know if y'all remember, I think it was August 24th.
It was the Bucks. The Bucks were playing, they decided not to play.
Exactly. Yeah. So that day. And, you know, Chris Paul, let me paint the picture. Chris Paul is the president of the NBA Players Association. Yep. He ended up doing a whole documentary. It's called The Day When Sports Stood Still. So he says, like, he's on his way to the bubble. He's getting calls from Bron and everybody, like, yo, they not playing. So he's got to, you know, figure out what they're going to do. Well, when he gets off the bus, he's got the gear on from head to toe. He's got the Dior Lows on, Dior Low Ones. He's got our socks, our sweater, and our hat. And he's wearing it, and all cameras is on him. And it just went bananas. Because you got to understand, too, like I tell people, it wasn't just a sports story. It became a national news story. So ABC, CBS, NBC, mm-hmm. everybody's CNN. Not necessarily CNN promoting no. Eastside Golf. But what they're saying is the NBA is not playing and Chris Paul is the president of the NBA Players Association. What are they going to do? What's going on? So they keep showing this clip and sales are going through the
wow.
roof.
Yeah. Wow.
Through yeah. the roof.
We had to cut it off.
But we end up cutting it off.
Got to stop sales.
Yeah, we but because you got
to talk about that. Yeah. A lot of people, it could be that could be a problem. It can actually destroy your business exactly. if you have too much demand, not enough inventory. Then people complain that they're not getting their stuff on time, and it's a real hassle.
You see delays like 6 to 9 months.
Yo,
yeah, I was just going. I mean, what helped us honestly was the pandemic. You know, people were more patient. You know what I'm saying? People would. Yeah, I wait 3 weeks for a sweater. I mean, I ain't doing that, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, that's how we stood up against that time. We definitely, you know, 2-day turnaround now as far as shipping. But, I mean, back then it was.
Yeah, I mean, it got ugly, though. I mean, it got ugly. Like, I mean, we went from, I think you could get it. We could get sweaters in like 6 weeks. To like 3 months. I mean, we can say it now. There were people that ordered in August and literally didn't get it to like November, December. Like he said, people were patient. So like, it was one of those things where too, what do? So everything is on fire after that moment. People wanted to invest in that moment. They like, yo, we see what you got going on. And we weren't ready. So like one of the things that we learned was we was like, all right, I'll never forget in September. We like, yo, we're literally going to put sold out on everything, try to figure out how to fill these orders, but we got to put the infrastructure in. And if you building a business, what I mean by infrastructure is you got to get lawyers, you got to get accountants, you got to make sure you own all your IP, like all of that stuff, because you got to have a infrastructure to be able to even take investment. You know, and so there were certain deals that we kind of missed out on because we didn't have the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. People were ready. They like, hey, we want to do this on a convertible note. We didn't know what a convertible note was. And then we had like bad deals that we were able to kind of get out of where people said they were going to do certain things and they didn't do it. So like investment decks, because we didn't know what we were doing in a sense. But we just took that time to literally, I would say from September to January, all we did was just put in infrastructure, figure out fulfillment, figure out customer service, figure out who we want to invest.
Who we want to hire.
Yeah. And then we kind of cut it back on, I would say, like in February. We had an article in GQ, and then we did like, you know, like I say, we did like 50,000 in one day. Mm-hmm. So we was like, damn, okay, it's a business now. We were able to get all the orders out, and we were able to kind of flip it back on. But it's, I would say, like, just anybody that wants to build a business, like, to his point, we were lucky enough because we built it during the pandemic and people were patient, but you got to. Gotta have an infrastructure. And you're not gonna be able to build. You need lawyers and you need accountants. Like those, that's where it starts if you want to build a real business and take investment in. Cause people looking at you, they're gonna be like, well, all right, we want to see these documents, we want to see this documents. And you're like, what? So you gotta, you know, learn all those things. I call it YouTube University. Yeah. Because it's all sure. out there that's if you fact. Want it.
We call it EYL University.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But bigger than that. So when you put the business on freeze, how are we gaining income? Or did we say, you know what? We're going to use our finance background and say, all right, we're going to stack some paper so that we can sustain this. Are we doing other things? Because I know you were at a bank for a certain point during this time.
Yeah.
What are we doing while we're putting the company on freeze?
Honestly, I mean, he wasn't getting paid.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I didn't get paid for a whole year. I was working for a whole year. Sweat equity.
Sweat equity. I love it.
Yeah. And he owns part of the business now. You know what I'm saying? So it was, I was the one, you know, using the bread to pay for my rent, pay for my food, anything that I needed. But then also anything that he needed, he just hit me and we get it.
Yeah.
But, it was tough. You know, I was borrowing money from here, trying to get money from here. And it was a bunch of no's. But, you know, just keep going using it.
Back to putting.
Maxed out the credit card.
Yeah, you know exactly. What I'm saying? Yeah. We was really inspired too by like Nipsey during that time. Like just all money in. Like we literally went all money in. Like we knew it was something special. We just kind of like, and I feel like a lot of people have been there before. It's like, you know, you got something, you know, it's coming. It's almost like you waiting on a big check. And it's just like, how do you just limit that debt before you get the big check? Because a lot of times you get debt so high, by the time you get the big check, you back at zero. Yeah. So it was just one of those things where what we did was we knew that we didn't want to give up a bunch of equity. So it was just like we just kept figuring out ways to reach in our own pocket. Like he said, didn't take anything from the business because it was more important about the business standing up once you got the infrastructure in place. And that's why when we actually cut it on, it was like, okay, it was worth the sacrifice now. Like, okay, boom, we can run now. Let's go.
And we weren't and sorry, we weren't paying any money on marketing. I mean, we still haven't paid any money on marketing. It's all been me being on the phone, just finding things that match in between what we talk about, things to talk about on the golf course, things that y'all talk about. I mean, shit, I put y'all on there a couple of times just from a standpoint of these are the things that we talk about on the golf course. You know what I'm saying? These are the things that we have in common with, I mean, we're regular folk, just like everybody else that don't play. That's mm-hmm. why you should come out here and just try it. You know, spread your network. You know what I'm saying? And it grew from there, just us being in tune with our customers. You just through Instagram. And that's how we grew it and kept their attention.
You spoke about convertible note. You didn't know mm-hmm. what that was. What do you know what it?
Yeah, I know what it is now. Yeah, 100%.
That was part of the learning process.
Now, we're raising money right now, so we went out and raised some capital. We raised it on a safe note. You know, Y Combinator, essentially.
Can you explain what a convertible note is for people?
Yeah, so for a convertible note is essentially you will receive cash right now based on what you think. Well, basically, you receive cash, and the note will mature into equity. Essentially, that's the simple term mm-hmm. of it. So you give me $100,000 right now, and you essentially it's just a note. So you don't own any equity, and then you could say in 12 months that $100,000 will then convert into equity. So at that 12-month period, if our business is valued at $1 million, that $100,000 is worth 10% of our company. So it converts. Now the good thing about a convertible note, you could also say, hey, you know what? Let's say the company's valued at $2 million. I could just pay you back on your note and give you interest, so you don't have to receive equity. But yeah,
so, that's a convertible. And then you said the investment deck. So that's like the deck that you put together for investors.
Yes, assuming, right? Yeah.
And it has like all of the projected revenue in it and stuff like that.
Yeah. So we had projected revenue, and we didn't even necessarily do that. What we did was we did it basically. We simplified it because we did it on a safe note. And if anybody, I would definitely tell them go look into what a safe note, Y Combinator. It really makes it simple for any like founders that are out there to kind of control your equity of your business. And we made it really simple. And then what we did was we put our strategy in there, essentially, on what we were going to do with the money in the third and fourth quarter. So we raised money basically in the first and second quarter of the year. Really, second quarter is when we really focused on raising money and capital, family and friends round, not a Series A. And then we essentially said when that note matures, you know.
How did you figure out how much equity you were willing to give up? Is that something you two sat down and said, all right, well, we're comfortable at this number?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was more of a where do you think we could thrive at? You know, if we give, I mean, let's say, just for example, 100%, let's say we're trying to give away 20% of our business. I mean, we got to a point where we were just like, I mean, is 20% too much? Because how much control do we want them to have? You know, how much visibility or what is it that they want from this? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, and how much of a stronghold and in the contract if that percentage is high enough, I mean, what they can actually do to our company, you know, what they can control and what they can say on what we do. So, but,
and I'll also say too, like just going through the process, you got to keep your business attractive. So like most like, and we had like a lot of basically VCs and sharks come at us early, yeah. Right? And so everyone's going to say, I only want to invest in your business unless I can have basically a strong percentage because I want to be invested in it. But then it's like, no, because if you do it too early, you don't necessarily even give room for VCs later with the big money. Mm-hmm. So early on, you really want to keep it as low as possible. And you got to be very strategic with who you invest with. And that's what we did. So like we went and necessarily got, I would say, like a quiet investor, someone that really knows to invest, like not someone that's like, all right, if I give you $100,000, I'm going to need it back in 6 months or I'm going to need it back in a year. No, it's an investment. Let this investment mature over time. So that was one of the things that I think we did. And then being strategic. So like if we had one person in this area, if we had a lawyer to invest, i.e. an example, like We didn't need to go get another lawyer to invest. Let's go get an accountant to invest. Let's go get another, you know, just different fields, because now you can leverage them as well because they're invested in your business. So we kind of diversified, I would say, our investor. And then we also were just really conscious of, like, and I'll say this, like, one of the deals that we did, we were able to get out like two deals basically to get us where we are today. And one of them was, I would feel like, they didn't understand what we were trying to do. It was kind of like a lack of knowledge. So we basically, he was like, yo, come down on equity so we can make somebody else fit so that the business is still attractive in the future. And they're like, huh, what? You want to come down? I was like, no, we got to do this because if we give up kind of what he was saying, the lion's share of our business too early, it leaves no room later on. Mm. And so we were able to honestly get out of that deal. But we were able, I would say one of the best deals we did was we partnered up with our manufacturing partner right now and get terms. Because everyone says cash flow, cash flow, cash flow. But I truly understand what cash flow means. Because you lock up your cash if you got bad terms. And an example would be when we first started the business, we were paying 50% on an order up front. Mm-hmm. And then it takes, what, 90 days for it to get produced?
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to sell it. So you really only get, you got 120 days. Let's say you put up $100,000 on inventory. You got 120 days without, and it's still locked up. And you still got bills every month. But now we were able to get to the point where we got better terms. So now we could place an order, 90 days to produce it. Once we receive it, we got a net 30. So now you got that cash.
Talk about net 30.
We just had a conversation about net 30.
Talk about net 30. People hear net 30, net 40, net 50, net 60. They don't know what that is.
That was something we learned very, very early.
Nah, net 30 is basically when you have, okay, it's the person is saying from this day you have 30 days to pay me. Or 45 days to pay me, but you get to receive the services on the front end.
Yeah.
So that was the thing. Like, you get the goods on the front end, where before we was paying for the, we had to put 50% up front. And this is why people say credit is so important, because you can't get these type of deals unless you have good credit.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were paying 50% up front and 50% on arrival. And then it was just all on us. Where now we can place an order, no money up, receive it, no money up. And then once we start, in a sense, getting money with that net 30, then you can pay them back.
Yeah, that's something that, you know, all of this stuff is stuff that we learn on the fly. At least we did learn on the fly. Yeah. And it's like learning the language is extremely important. Mm-hmm. So for us, we've been on the opposite side of that, as far as, like, you know, if we have an ad, let's say Joe Blow's, you know, grass cutting company wants to do an ad, and then they have like net 45 or net 30. So we do the ad, but then they don't pay till 30 days or 45 days later. So it's important to understand that, because it's like, if you do an ad for somebody, you think you're going to get paid tomorrow, and then you're waiting on the money, and then it's like, where's the money? It's like, it doesn't come until 2 months
right,
from now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It goes back to your point of why having an accountant is super important.
Yeah.
Like, we'll have like six ads in that time, and you're like, wait, did we get paid for the last one?
Right.
Wait, we used to start going. I remember when we first started our YouTube, and we had some views, and I'm like, wait, we made $83. And I'm calling Google. I'm like, look, man, when we getting this $83? They're like, nah, it's net 30, guys.
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, all right, yeah, well, I knew that.
I'll wait on it.
Right. And I also say, like, too, to your point, it's just a stigma, like you said earlier, like, we don't know knowledge, and that's why credit is so important in debt. Like, it's okay to use good business credit, and so you don't tie up your cash. You know what I mean? You just got to be smart about it to know. But, like, that's what I was saying earlier, where, like, you give up so much. When you finally do get the income, you don't have nothing left because you had all these bad terms where, like, literally, okay, yeah, you did $50,000, but you still owe $80,000 because, and you behind, and now they charge you interest and all of that. So all of that stuff is very, very important. Like you said, man, we learned it on the fly. Like, you just gotta, what was that book? My man from Lightship Capital. It was called Venture Something. I wish I knew the title of it. But it was,
I know what you're talking about.
It was a really good book, and it really, really broke down like how venture capitalists think and what are some of the most important things that you need to do to kind of get to where we are today. Because it was definitely learning. Like, we definitely learned. Got a lot of good people getting the right help around you, just like anything else. And now, you know, we're rocking and rolling. We got our COO. Definitely need somebody that, like, knows the business. That was one of the important things. And then start putting people in position. So he has a role in the company. I have a role in the company. Our COO has a role in the company. Like, everybody kind of, like, playing their role. Everybody still does everything, but it's still kind of like you want to work towards truly like putting, you know, people in the right position to be successful.
Very important. Okay, so how did this deal with Jordan come about?
I mean, from all the marketing that we did, there came a point where actually CJ Paul reached out to us.
In my mind, I'm thinking like CJ Paul. I know it was a CC Bathia connection.
Jordan brand athletes all around us.
So CJ, he definitely asked about two of everything, like Earl said, you know, and then more to give to people in the bubble. But
so we two of everything exactly. You had the polo shirts, obviously. Mm-hmm. What exactly are they asking two of every? Like, what's
this time? It was
At that time, it was t-shirts, sweatshirts, hats, socks, and like some magnet lapels. Okay, that we had.
Yeah, so it's like four items. It wasn't too crazy. Mm-hmm. Okay. We didn't even have polos, and that's the other thing I want to say too. Just to chime in, is like we started a golf brand, and we didn't even have polos, right? It was just the logo, and then like I got to give O a lot of credit because he don't rush. Like he said, he want quality on everything.
Yeah.
So it's like doing it the right way. He could have easily rushed and be like, oh, we a golf brand, let's just slap some polos together. It was like, nah, I want them polos to be right.
Yeah.
And you're the actual logo, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so, I'm on a shoe, man. It's just crazy. But, so going from there, well, where did I stop?
Nah, just the whole like CJ, like Gentry and
So CJ came on and he was just like, yeah, I definitely want to introduce you guys to Gentry Humphrey. He's a VP over at Nike, I guess. The god of footwear, of bringing sneakers back in Nike. That's what they know him for. But we went out to go play golf with him. First, we got on the phone with him and he liked us enough to where he got us on the phone with MJ. And so we had
Michael Jordan.
What? Excuse me. Like, can we not just breeze over that? You got on the phone with Michael Jeffrey.
Yeah, he skipped a little bit. Nah.
Earl, please, don't breeze over the Michael Jordan part.
Nah, we not going to.
I'll come back.
Yeah. So we end up. So what happened? So this is like August of 2020. We talked to G. G's like, yo, I love what y'all doing. And this time, he knew MJ was real big into golf. Everybody know, well, not everybody, but after the documentary, everybody saw it. So he flips it over to MJ, like, yo, just take a look at
Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan.
Michael Jeffrey.
Michael Jeffrey Jordan.
Yes, sir.
Just our deck, though.
I'm about to do the J. Cole. Michael. Jeffrey. Jordan.
Yes. So he flips the deck over to him. He sees it, and he's like, yo, I love it. Like, just an email. We haven't spoken to him or nothing like that. It's just kind of just like, you know, somebody's like, we come to something to you like, I know MV, I'm gonna see what he think. Like, I can't just walk you in the room just yet. Like, let me test the waters. If he bites, then we'll take it from there. So that's what happened. And then, like he said, the moment came, because then things kind of started rolling. And we still, like he said, we're marketing, we're still doing our thing. And then we end up, so it was funny because he's like, all right, yo, y'all ready? And we like, what you mean? He's like, Mike want to, you know, y'all ready to talk to Mike? Like, y'all going to talk directly to him and kind of pitch it, like, because he need to hear it from y'all, like, y'all passion, the real story. So we like, yeah, we ready. And it was funny, I always joke with people because I'm like, this is the first Zoom call where, like, literally, they was like, yo, y'all need to be on there early. Y'all got 30 minutes. Like, and it said, don't get starstruck. Don't be, like, he gonna come on, y'all gotta be ready, because there was other stuff that he had to do too. So it wasn't just like our meeting. It was just like, we found some time, he gonna take out time out of his schedule and pitch it to him. And we got on there, we pitched it to him, and I'll never forget, like, we did our whole spiel. He was like, all right, those are two great stories. We tell the best stories. Did we sign them yet? And they were like on the phone, like, we on it, like, yeah, you know. So it was like MJ believed, like, he immediately got in. One of the things too, like, he loved golf. I don't know if people know, like, at one point Michael Jordan literally got kicked off a golf course for wearing cargo shorts, like, in modern time, like, not low before he won championships. No, like, this happened, I think, in Miami in like 06. Don't quote me on the date, but literally it was definitely in the 2000s. Michael Jordan got kicked off a golf course and got basically said, you can't come back here, because he had on cargo shorts. So, like, I feel like that was another reason too why he created his own golf course. And he understood, like, y'all trying, what y'all trying to break and do. And, like, and, you know, it was just like, he's like, yo, like, I get it. I get it. And from that
he moment, has a golf course?
Yeah, he has his own golf course.
Grove 23 down in Hope Sound, Florida.
In Florida?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Y'all frequent there?
Yeah, we've been out there a few times.
Right next to Jupiter, Florida. I mean, it's not too far from where like Tiger Woods live, and you already know.
So how many have you had, like, how many times have y'all communicated with him?
We've talked to him by like three times. Oh, talked to him a couple of times without me just being around.
So how's that? Yeah. How is he? Is he, because I always, everybody always, okay, you know, he's the most competitive person in the world, and he's real hard to you know, on his teammates that in that documentary, yeah, like that. Yeah. So, you know, not a lot of people will have access to him. Like, he's real, like, he seems like an introvert also. Like, mm-hmm. He's not really, like, he's Jay-Z. It's not, you can't just, not a lot of people speaking to Michael Jordan. So, how is he?
Yeah, I would say the first time we met him, it was with G. We were out at the golf course. We finished up on the 18th hole. And G says, yeah, man, these are my guys. And, you know, this Olajuwon, he could really play. First thing he asked me, well, what'd you shoot? I'm like, man, I shot like 70s. Man, he's like, man, get out of here, man. You
yeah,
know?
He's so definitely. He's
really competitive.
70 is a professional number. Yeah, right, right, for those not in the know.
But, nah, really competitive, nice guy. We didn't even talk about basketball, but that was just the first time that we met.
Yeah, so the first time. And then, like, it was kind of just real casual, breeze by, kind of like a thing. Like, you know, like, he acknowledged, like he definitely spoke, but it was kind of like, all right, moving on. But then I would say, like, so the one of the times we get up there, probably like the third time, we out there with CC Sabathian, who loves golf. Like, CC, he retired, he playing golf every day. And so CC, we go down there to the golf course, the Grove 23. We go play nine holes. I'm like, all right, I'm about to run back in or whatever. So I go back in to the golf shop, and I'll never forget this moment for the rest of my life. So I walk in the joint, and he's sitting down, and he looks at me, and he's like, my boy. I'm like, I'm thinking somebody behind me. I'm like, there's no way Michael Jordan knows who I am. And then he kind of gave me that nod, like, now I'm talking to you. Like, you know, I'm talking to you. Like, what's up?
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, shit. Mike, you know, so I walk over there, and, you know, I'm talking to him. He just like, I don't even really remember the depth. Like, he said, what's going on? Like, where's Olajuwon? And I'm like, oh, he outside, like, with CeCe. Like, they on the tee or whatever. And then somebody next to him, he knew, knew him or whatever. He like, so this dude named Jesse. So Jesse, like, Olajuwon outside? So he didn't get up, go talk to, oh. So then somebody else at the table, like, oh, man, look what you got on the feet. So I had on, like, the U.S. Open Jordan 4s. And so it was, like, real exclusive. And then Mike looked down. He like,
the Roger Federer joints?
He was like, nah, these were these are golf U.S. Open.
Oh, the golf. Okay,
yeah,
okay,
yeah, the golf. So he like, damn, I don't even got those. I'm like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to give up my plug yet. You know what I mean? Like, so it was kind of like that awkward moment. And then, like, we just started rapping. But I did kind of, I do tell people, I did kind of have that moment where it was like, all right, like, it was like frozen in time. I don't even remember what the conversation was about. Like, he just kind of like, all right, you can move now. Like, like, I was like stuck there. Like, it was like, I was like, all right, cool. So then we end up going back out on the tee, and then we actually got a picture. And we got it, definitely. It's on our Instagram, and we got to put that up on the website too. Yeah. But we end up taking a picture shortly after that with him. So it was CC, him, and I kind of came back in, and then we just like busted up for a minute and got the pic with him.
So, all right, so you meet him, you develop a relationship, he likes it. So he signs you guys to Jordan Brand? Is that how that happens?
So we definitely still working on a partnership, okay, as far as when it comes to that. I would say, actually, the day after that happened, he left. And had to go do some work, had to go do something, and I stayed to practice. So got there at maybe like 8 a.m., and I'm hitting balls, you know, out on the driving range, just practicing. He gets there at like 9, you know, yellow Ferrari pull up, parking on the curb all lopsided. Yeah. It's his course. So he park, he get out, he wave. I'm like, yo. So he goes inside, probably tees off in another 15 minutes. So waves again. So ends up playing 9 holes, makes a turn. I'm still practicing. You know, anyway, like, yo, I see you, you know. Then he ends up playing another 9 holes, and they finish. I'm still practicing. Hour goes by after he finishes. I finally finish. I come inside. My polo drenched, you know what I'm saying, yeah, just from being out there all day. I got in, and he's like, okay, I see you out there working. You know, get this man some Sincoro, you know, because you know, he owns part of Sincoro. So, drank Sincoro, stood there for a couple of minutes, ended up changing, had a flight to catch. Changed, came back, sat down. He was probably sitting at the table with a good 4 or 5 other guys. And one of the guys at the table just asked, yo, so tell me a little bit about Eastside Golf and what you guys are doing. I maybe talked for a good minute and a half, and MJ just cuts me off. And he says, and that's why we're collabing with them. You know, and I just explained, you know, who I was, who Earl was, and what we're trying to do and trying to change and what we're actually bringing to the game and how it's going to look different. And he was just all with it, you know. And then we end up drinking some Corvo together, smoking a little cigar, you know, and
so,
it was cool.
So, so the collaboration is still kind of in, it's in, still in works.
Yeah. Collaboration, but partnership.
Yeah, I mean, it's there. Like, we definitely are partners with the Jordan brand. Yeah, like, it's it's definitely a partnership there. We are, what we're working on right now is just trying to figure out, you know, for next year. Like, that's the big thing. And, like, we got shoes in, like, record time. So that's why, like, these first ones are super limited, just because.
So what exactly, all right, what exactly did they collaborate? You guys took Jordan sneakers and made them golf shoes?
So, no, they had golf shoes out. They had already started coming out with golf shoes. Right.
Of Jordan sneakers.
Jordan sneakers with golf shoes.
With cleats on them.
Yes, with the cleats on them. And then they started, like, engineering them better, because initially it was just literally like
sneaker,
just like a sneaker, like that's a golf sneakers, bottle, right? And then they end up developing to where they like, okay, they started signing like athletes on the tour. So there's a couple guys on the PGA Tour that wears them, like Bubba Watson is one, Pat Perez, a black guy by the name of Harold Varner who's out there. And so, like, the engineering started to get behind it, so the shoes started to become more and more popular. They started making more and more of them. And then where we came involved was, we're the first ever Jordan golf shoe collab with a golf brand. So, like, they've kind of created, like, custom shoes, golf shoes before, but they've never did a collaboration with any other golf brand.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's where our partnership lies, where it's like, this is the first ever, but we're excited because there's more in the future. So,
so what exactly are you, like, what kind of merch did you collab on?
So, right now, we just did the shoe.
The shoe.
This one. The shoe. And we did it in record time. Like, people got to understand, like, we did it a shoe and literally in like 8 months.
You made your own shoe?
So, yeah, we had.
What's the? It's the Jordan 4, right?
It's the Jordan 4. Yeah, but we designed it. Like, the colors, the.
Okay, so it's the Jordan 4, but you put the spice on it.
No, the spice are already on there, but what we did
was spice. Spice.
The drip.
Y'all had your own drip to it.
Yes. So, I mean, I came up with the design myself, and it was. Honestly, I came to G. We went to go to breakfast, and I came up with a deck. It was probably like 6 different shoes. He came with a deck. It was maybe like 4 or 5 different shoes. We sat them next to each. Well, actually, we just exchanged decks.
Yeah.
I looked on it, and I was like, bro, it's the same shoe.
Oh, yeah.
I got on mine.
So, yeah, both. That's, and I'm thinking to myself, like, y'all both said we're doing the 4? Because I would imagine they would wanted you to collaborate on a bunch of shoes. They gave you a bunch of the numbers, and you're like, the 4 is the one?
Nah. Usually when you collab with Jordan, you don't have a choice.
Oh, they telling you.
Yeah, they already got inline shoes, and you get it like.
Yeah, so there's a certain time that, let's say Nike's coming out with the Jordan 8 at this time.
So,
you know, during June through October, and we coming out with a collab through June through October. So we're gonna be getting the 8.
Yeah.
You know, so it just depends on when
you don't get the
coming out.
Yeah. You don't get the pick.
It makes sense though. So now the Union 4.
Yeah, it's the year of the 4.
It's the year of the 4. So the Union 4, it goes up there. Mm-hmm. If Don C wanted to collaborate, he would have a four.
Yeah, and like even Don C said it, like you take what they give you. Like, quote unquote, he didn't necessarily want the 2. He killed the 2
on his design.
Still one of the best 2s out there. But at the end of the day, like you don't get the pick.
The four it is.
And you just kind of put your style on, like he said, you put the spice on it. And that's what we were able to do. But there's more coming. Like, so basically, we was in line. We collabed. It was dope. And then just the reaction has been just unbelievable. The way people, the buzz has just been.
What's the first thing I said when y'all came out the car?
Yeah, did we bring them? Like, where they at?
How receptive were they to you not having the Jordan logo, but the actual Eastside Golf logo it's on the tongue, correct?
Yeah. It's on the tongue.
They was like, all right, we can do that.
Yeah, they were very acceptive.
The cleats have that logo on the tongue. The Jordan logo on where the Jordan logo is?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's right on the tongue.
It's right there on the tongue where the Air Jordan. Well, actually, the regular 4 has the patch on it.
Right.
this is the first floor where they it's no patch on the actual
it's you.
Floor. It's just the logo.
And it's just in bread. Yeah.
You guys send us the professional pictures, we'll put it on YouTube.
For sure. And then on the bottom of it, I actually came out with a canvas.
Yeah.
The first thing I said, yo, bro, the cleats? We got them?
Gotta be prepared at all times.
Yes.
This is not like you guys. But don't worry, look, you see this mantle?
Yeah, it's not like us.
This mantle up here is waiting for y'all.
Yeah, for sure.
It's waiting for y'all.
Oh, yeah, we definitely need that.
For sure.
So, all right, when did they drop?
Tomorrow.
7th, yeah.
Oh, tomorrow. They haven't come out yet.
Nah, yeah, we released them tomorrow. So we had a raffle. So we did it raffle style.
And tomorrow, because this episode is going to come out after that.
Yep.
So June 7th. August 7th.
August 7th, yep.
It's going to come out. And how is it going
to
be released?
So we did a raffle just because we're trying to fight the bots.
Ugh.
So, like, we still got bots. Like,
yeah.
I mean, and even Nike gets bots. Like, and we're not as big as Nike. So what you basically do is to ensure that it is as random as possible, we did a raffle where people can sign up, which the sign up has been insane. We got like 117,000 entries, but we had to scrape through. I think at one point it was like 800,000 because of the bots.
Yeah,
so it's just over a million now.
So you basically gotta like constantly be scrubbing to ensure. And there's ways that you can check like essentially like user behavior. So like there's a way that if you were to sign up on a raffle, 9 times out of 10 for us, like you're gonna hit the site multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just come on one time, then we know, generally speaking, that's probably a bot.
So you get to control that, or Nike does?
Well,
that?
It's kind of like a combination of both, right? Like they obviously kind of help you through that process.
It's sold. Where's it sold at?
Nike? It's sold exclusively on eastsidegolf.com.
Oh, it's sold on your website.
Yeah, yeah. These are exclusively sold on eastsidegolf.com for the first.
That traffic gonna be crazy.
Oh,
yeah.
How much inventory do you have?
It's super limited. I can't release the number, but okay. It's super limited.
And yeah. Nike, and that's Nike ships it.
Yeah. It's all gonna be shipped. Yeah. It's all gonna be shipped and delivered. But you gotta go to eastsidegolf.com.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Every sneaker page on Instagram had them.
So yeah, like, yeah. Now we dominated the sneaker culture for like 48 hours.
It was
like,
crazy.
How long do you anticipate before it sells out?
Oh, it's gonna be seconds. I mean, because it's already in a sense sold out. Like the way you get it is through the raffle, and like I said, we've scrubbed and we still got about 117,000 entries for super limited pairs.
2 seconds?
They said like the buzz for these is like the Dior ones.
Yeah.
No BS. Like,
and they're golf shoes.
And they're golf shoes.
So everybody's going to wear them in the golf, or some people's just going to wear them?
I think
a few people are going to take the spikes off the bottom of the shoe.
Yeah, because you can take them out.
And just wear them.
Because you can replace the spikes, essentially.
Yeah, you go to a golf
store. You know the address, right? I'm gonna show you the closet after we finish.
Okay.
This,
but.
Yeah, you go to a golf store and you get a spike remover. I mean, it's a little 2-prong. Take you a second.
Yeah.
Clip it out. Just, you got some.
Because it was built so like you wear them down, you can kind of replace
fire.
Them.
Mm-hmm. No, they fire. Mm-hmm.
You can definitely take it out. And that's the thing. Like people honestly are treating it like a collector's item too.
Yeah.
So like people just going like just like Dior's. I'm telling you, it's so similar to the Dior. Like people are gonna try to get them and just put them up. Now there's gonna be people that will also wear them on the golf course as well, but generally speaking, most people are just gonna kind of put them up and sit on them.
Mm-hmm. Is it too late to get the comp pair?
No, it's not. We're gonna talk about that. I know that the apparel is one thing, right? And y'all trying to change the game. So obviously with the cleats, but what is your vision for some of these tours? Are we customized? Like, what are you gonna do? Like, is it gonna stick to khakis and polos, or we got a bigger vision? Like, are we gonna see dudes wearing headbands on the? Like, what are we doing?
I mean, right now, when it comes to the tournaments, we're taking the approach of collabing with every single tournament. So we're coming out with pieces that we sell in their tour tent. So like, even we just did a Rocket Mortgage Classic, did a collab with Rocket Mortgage. So all the pieces were custom. They're not sold on the website. You can only get them at that tournament. So we're releasing pieces like that. But then also how we truly grow in golf is the pieces that we're releasing that are for golf. I mean, we're talking about, you know, pieces as far as like a vest, hoodie, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but then
yeah.
Also it go over a polo, over a t-shirt. This is something that's coming a little later this year.
Yeah.
We're coming out with a jacket, you know, later this year, maybe a light bomber next year, you know? So these are different things that you can honestly wear, you know, out with the boys, go get a drink in, but then also wear to the golf course and be comfortable, be warm, and be fashionable all at the same time.
Are y'all trying to find a signature athlete? Because I know you mentioned Varner, and I know Cameron.
Cameron Champ.
Because it's very limited. There's like four players, right. African-American players that are on the tour. Mm-hmm. So I could imagine maybe starting there and then...
Nah, that's not the plan. Okay. I mean, we got an athlete right here. Like...
We're gonna break that news after. We getting there.
Nah. Oh, I mean, like he said, that's why the reason he started the company. Like, he's super talented. Like, he's not wasting his time. Like, he know, like, if I thought like it was a waste of time. So like, I even got to tell this story. You mentioned Cameron Champ.
Yeah.
So we played in the Pro-Am, which is essentially, it's almost like an open run. So imagine like before an NBA game, if you got to like warm up with the guys, right? And just kind of warm up. So that's basically what it was, like a warm up that we did at a PGA tournament. So it's called a Pro-Am. So you play with pros and amateurs. And, oh, we get to the first tee, and, like, the two pros get up and hit. It was Tony Finau and Cameron Champ in New Orleans. So they get up. They bomb it down the middle. And then we about to walk off, because typically we playing up. Amateurs play from up here. Pros play from back here. Oh was like, nah, I want to play from back here. And the PGA Tour rules official was like, you know, sir, like, this ain't the time. Like, just tee up there. He like, nah, I want to play from right here. And he was like, oh, okay. So then he ended up putting it in the ground, got up there and bombed that joint down the middle. And these two are one of the longest guys on tour. He hit it past both of them right down the middle. And they were just like, oh, wow. And then, you know, I got up there, hit my little shot. I was in the fairway. I wasn't long like these guys. But I say all that to say, like, he one can definitely can compete against them. It was like, you know, when we were out there, he definitely showed that. But I think, like, to your other point, like, he is the logo. So it's like, first you're going to kind of start with him. Yeah. And then I think, you know, as the brand grows, there will be other people that we kind of bring on. But it's all about kind of like embodying the ethos of the brand. And I feel like that's what Jordan Brand did.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we collab with partners, we just try to make sure that it's alignment, because we don't want to come anything kind of traditional. So we just want to continue to kind of create that new wave.
Yeah. Eastside fool.
So you go. So you're a professional golfer now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So work still. I mean, head designer of Eastside, but still working on, you know, replacing myself in the business, and then going to be doing mini tour events. You know, hopefully Q School, qualifying school for the PGA Tour, and just getting runs in, like he said, just mini tour events, and starting just to get back comfortable and find time to practice. Yeah. You know, while running this business, you know. So
I think you guys are very similar. I think what we've done in the world of finance, just breaking all rules and wearing hoodies and talking how we talk, is kind of what you guys are doing for golf.
Yeah.
And so it's a sport that, like we started by saying, not many African Americans are involved in. What are your plans to get youth to be in love with the game, in touch with the game, understand the game, exposure to it? What do you got? You have that in the plans?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I'll go and I'll let you go. But first off, it was always about having them, getting them interested. You know, that was always like, how are we going to get them to even want to play golf, mm-hmm. you know? And I felt like it was always representation. Just never seen anybody that acted normal or acted like them and then played golf, you know? Definitely Tiger Woods was the catalyst, was the first person to push the needle forward. But then to find similarities in between a person you see playing golf, I felt like making the logo would speak to everybody without even playing golf. But you see the logo and it says, damn, like, I can be myself. It don't matter if I got a Cuban link chain on and swinging it hard as I can, the chain going this way, club going this way, I could still play golf and have a good time and be fashionable just like the logo. So first you get their attention, which we did. But then we started to get the attention of young professionals. So that was first, because honestly, in golf, the younger generation, how they're going to be successful is their parents. You know, they're going to be the people that take them to the golf course, pay for the clubs, mm-hmm. pay for the lessons and all those things. So we got the young professionals' attention, and then we show the positives and things that they can get from it. So now they're teaching their kids, you know, the positives and how to network and how to even play golf, because you can get a golf scholarship, or just you can learn the networking tools that you need in life just from playing golf. So, but
yeah, no, he's 100% right. Like, the dividends, it pays dividends much earlier and sooner. if you go after young professionals. Like, you guys are prime example, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners are prime examples. If they picked up a golf club today and really took the time and invest in it, they will see a return on that, I would say, probably in 12 to 18 months. The networking, the opportunities to travel, whether it could just be something relaxing or it could be opportunities for their business. Rather than if you have a child at 12 or 13, there's nothing wrong with it, but the return is going to be a little bit longer. It's going to be, you know, they got to wait till they get to college and things of that nature. So our whole thing, kind of just reiterating his point, is just like, if you grow up seeing it, it's like, oh, like your kids, I don't know if you guys have kids or not, but it's like, if you start and you coming home with the golf clubs and they seeing, they like, damn, dad, he like, yeah, I got this deal on the golf course. They just start seeing it now. You can kind of talk to them about, okay, how this thing really works. And then they start seeing the value in it, because that's the biggest thing. And you kind of touched on it very early on, where it was like, we hear about it, but we don't see it. So now you get someone that can actually, like, in your household, you seeing them actually on the golf course and what opportunities are coming about, you're like, okay, it is real. It is doable. Because that's the thing. You just got to make it real and tangible. So to his point, I just think, like, we are focused on the younger generation for sure, but like, I feel like we naturally do that and they want to kind of play golf. But like, I would say our immediate focus is young professionals investing in them, mm-hmm. because if we do that, then they'll start having kids and training up their kids where it'll just be normal, because it's just like, I don't know, my dad just was always playing golf. I didn't know that was not anything. It's just like when you grow up in a house, you don't know. Like, you grow up wherever in the projects, you just like, I didn't know it was something different. I didn't know this world was bad. This was just my world. This was just my universe. So it's like, how do we normalize golf? How do we normalize stocks, assets, all of those things for the next generation, and they can actually see the results of it?
And honestly, we're breaking the company into three branches. One being apparel, the main branch where we make all our bread. The second branch being the professional route. Well, I'm sorry, nonprofit route. So nonprofit money that we receive, we would put it towards sponsoring black professional golfers, making more professional golfers, mm-hmm. but then also making more professional black teachers as well, expanding that PGA of America reach and to where they'll still be rocking Eastside. So that's the second branch. And then the third one is teaching. So he would be a part of that one. And actually making, like I said, more PGA professionals, but teaching them and having the opportunity to get them accredited through Eastside. That's a goal of ours.
Yeah.
So now we're giving people accreditations, you know what I'm saying? And they can run an entire golf course. Also, we're going to be putting money towards the younger individuals that want to play golf and getting them donations, the balls, the clubs, the clothes, and to where they can be out there and it can be accepted by the golf course or by the people around it. So, but all of those things, I mean, I would say that's the plan to actually influence the next generation. Yeah.
Well. Yeah. Speaking of teaching, mm-hmm. you had a very prestigious student from your state.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, now I was, I guess now the president of the United States currently, Mr. Joe Biden. I had an opportunity to teach him, which was kind of crazy. Like, the story was wild because I'm at Wilmington Country Club. And like I said, I was the first African-American golf pro there. And I used to caddy there. So it was like a full circle thing where, like, if you know caddies, like, you're just there, you're just carrying the clubs. It's not nothing sexy about caddying. And then to come back and get an opportunity to teach there. But one day, I'm just doing my thing, you know. And at this point, I was getting a lot of recognition for my teaching at this time. And so my man Ron Oliver comes in, who was close to Joe. That's like his best friend. And he says, yo, like, you ready? He's out there on the lesson tee. I'm like, huh? What? So, all right, I go out there, and sure enough, it's Joe Biden. But it's crazy because, like, I tell people, like, you're training them, but it's like an audience now. Like, you got Secret Service there. They super tight on you. Everybody's looking like, oh, that's Joe. That's Joe. And I was I just kind of got in my teaching mode, you know, because I love to teach. So we were just out there just chopping it up, helping them out, you know, making better contact with the golf ball. And then, you know, just small conversation. And one of the things I just remember, I'm like, so, you know, what do you like about coming out here the most? Like, what's your highlight? And he was like, I get to drive the golf cart. Because everywhere I've been for like the last, you know, 8 years, I get driven. I don't get to drive no more. So it's kind of out there. He gets a little bit more control. But it was a dope experience. You know what I mean? It was just something that he was like, yo, keep going. Keep doing your thing. And just, you know, I was able to kind of capture that moment, you know, with a photograph. So it was definitely one of those dope experiences to be able to, you know, teach the vice president then, but now the president of the United States.
There you have it.
Michael Jordan, Joe Biden.
Yeah, no, it's been crazy. The support for the brand, there's so many people we need to shout out. Like, like I said, Chris Paul has been unbelievable, supportive. We signed the CAA. You got Sean Pekos over there.
Oh, you signed to them?
They're
agents?
Yeah, yep. So they do brand representation for us. Over
there.
I was
just thinking about Pet Guys because we did the we met Dwayne Wade.
On the golf course.
Yeah, so we work with his division over there too. So Pet Guys works over there, Desmond is over there, Lisa is manager. So it's a whole
team called CAA Amplify or CAA Amp.
Yeah. So that's their division. So we sit in the golf division. So we got two folks over there, one by the name of Annette Parker, she's been excellent, and Sam Sternberg. So Sam and Annette is kind of like managing.
What do they do for you?
So they bring in brand partnerships. So basically, we get opportunities. So we signed, we can tell them, BMW.
Yeah,
BMW. So we got a two-year deal with BMW Championship that we did.
We also have a deal with, you guys are like this one, Coinbase. Just imagine, that was the whole thing, taking financial literacy and making it cool. So now you got a cool logo, and every time you see it, you're thinking, damn, like, finance is cool too. Like, maybe I want to start reading up on that or take the, EYL University.
There we go. Looks like
finance. So.
Smart man, last one.
Yeah, so they help manage a lot of our deals for us, and also, within their portfolio, they gives us opportunity and exposure because they're connected to so many different athletes, like for the whole seeding opportunity. So it's been great. Like CAA has been really, really to be a part of like that powerhouse and like the heads of it as well, because they all play golf, right? Like, so the head of sports, the head of music, the head of this, the head of that, and CAA has that reach. So yeah. It's been great. It's been good to really, work with them.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate you guys, man. I'm sure you're going to be killing the game for years and years to come. So I'm excited to see your journey. I'll be waiting for the cleats. Tell them, how can they follow you? Initiative that you have coming. I know it'll be too late to buy the sneakers, but tell them all the information, website, social media handles, all that stuff.
Yeah, website, eastsidegolf.com. Social media handle on Instagram is @eastsidegolf. Twitter is @EastsideGolf, then the number 6, EastsideGolf6 on Twitter. And you can reach out to us either at customerservice@eastsidegolf.com or just hit us in the DMs, hit us on EastsideGolf and just get in touch with us.
Yeah, and then I also say, stay tuned. We got a lot of partnerships, coming up. So even if you can't get these pair of Jordans, we got more coming next year. We got more coming. We got more clothes, more collab.
Big dog.
Yeah. It's a lot coming. So I know this was kind of like one of them ones where I feel like a lot of people will be disappointed that they didn't get the first ones.
Yeah.
But trust me and believe me, there's so much more. And as you guys know, we got so much in the hopper that we baking on. They just take a while for, real stuff takes 6 to 8 months. Maybe sometimes even longer. But don't be disappointed. Definitely check out eastsidegolf.com. We about to change the sport forever.
There you have it.
Big though.
Troy, housekeeping.
Yeah, shout out to everybody on Patreon.com. Y'all know that's our Proud to Pay program. Obviously, Tier 5 members, you have access to EYL University, the number one place for everything business and finance related. Shout out to all the 10,000 earners. 10,000? 10,000. Shout out to all 10,000 of you. You have tremendously helped the financial world, not by just taking the information, but applying it and giving it to other people around you. So shout out to all y'all. And shout out to everybody supporting the merch. Obviously, EYL is more than just a podcast. We're not the typical podcast. So shout out to everybody supporting the merch and spreading the brand. We love y'all.
That's it, ladies and gentlemen. Love is love. We'll see you guys next week. Peace.
Peace.
My graduates from my school being Forbes. Backdrop.
Backdrop.
A mic drop. Backdrop.
Backdrop.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.